a message in song, wasn't it? If you have your Bibles tonight, go to Galatians chapter number 5. Galatians chapter number 5 is where we're going to turn this evening. And last week we began what we hope to be a study throughout the book of Galatians chapter 5, and one in particular about the fruits of the Spirit. But before we can get into what these fruits are for us in our individual lives, we want to lay a little bit of groundwork to understand how they work and how they operate, okay? So last week, what our big idea last week was don't be tied up, get tied in. Remember that? And we tied Michael all up, didn't we? We had a good time. Him and I even ran a three-legged race. It was terrible. We would have lost if there were any competition in the room, but we ran the race nonetheless. And so here we go. Here we go into tonight, right? So we're supposed to have the fruits of the Spirit evident in our hearts and in our lives. This is just a potting plant, of course, and I got some soil in here. And here in my pocket, actually, I've got a... I love peaches. How many of you like peaches? Let me see your hand. Yeah, I absolutely love this. This is just it's a peach seed. It's a little pit of a peach. And so, hold on. I'm going to get my hands just a little bit dirty, and would you like to have some peaches? How many of you would like to have peaches? Okay, good. Well, good news for you. I have the seed of a peach, and so I'm going to, I'm going to plant this seed, and I'm going to water it. Now, I'm not all that knowledgeable when it comes to, farming and having a green thumb or anything like that, but this is what I know. If you're going to plant a peach, it's going to grow a tree, and the tree will have peaches on it. Do I got it right so far? Okay, I'm just making sure. But in order to do that, you got to have the seed, which I just put in there. You got to have the soil, which I got. You've got to have this nice fancy pot, which, thanks to Miss Rice, we have. This was in her garage. So I got this. So I got all these elements. I know you got to have good lighting, right? This will do. Okay, so, and then you need water. I know that. So I'm going to make a mess. So is that okay? Well, it's okay. It doesn't matter. We'll have David clean it up. All right, so I'm going to add some water here. Let's see here. Hold on one second. All right, now I'm sure between the seed, the soil, the pot, the water, the light. I'm not for sure. Let's go down the checklist again. The seed. Check. All right. The seed. Okay. When I point at you, that's your cue to say check. The seed. Okay. Wow, that was impressive. Okay. The soil. Good job. The pot. The lights. The water. I know what it needs. It needs volcanic Alaska water. If anything will make a seed grow, this will make it grow. All right. Just a job, I understand. Yeah. Brother Jeff, let me preach a sermon. You listen. All right. I have a feeling we're going to be here for a while, right? Is that how it works? Yes or no? Is that how it works? Well, I mean, yes, but no. I mean, yes, that's how it works, but no, that's not actually how it works, is it? You see, any farmer, any gardener, anyone who's ever had a vineyard or a garden in their backyard, here's what they'll tell you. Okay, if you want to see fruit, there's a process. If you want to see fruit, there's a process. And listen, it's not just true when it comes to peaches. It's true when it comes to your spiritual life as well. That if we want to see fruit, there is a process. If we want to grow a peach tree in our backyard, we are going to have to work very hard throughout every season that there is. In the wintertime, we're going to have to prune the tree. We're going to have to cut all the branches back that we don't want. We're going to have to make sure all the nutrients can be energizing and flowing to the right branches, the perfect amount of branches that it won't overdo or have lack of nutrients to different parts of the tree. During the springtime, we're going to have to cut back all the weeds and all the wayward branches that come. We're going to have to prune and trim or to tie up any branches that might be there. Or if the tree would have been blown over from the winter, we'll have to strengthen it back up and tie it back to the stake. In the summertime, we're going to have to make sure it gets adequate water. We're going to make sure that it has the proper amount of sunlight. We have to make sure we don't scorch it. Right, we have to keep all the enemies, like the bugs and the pestilence and insects, and we have to keep them all away so they don't contaminate the fruit or ruin. In the harvest time, we're going to actually have to go out to the tree and we're going to actually pick the fruit in order to be able to reap it. And the gardener or the vineyard or the farmer who decides to take a week off or who decides to sleep in, who decides that all that work throughout all those seasons, it just doesn't really feel worth it. Like, it just seems like if I have everything on the checklist, then it should just abracadabra, click the heels, grow. That's not how it works, is it? Nor is that how it works when it comes to our spiritual life. That's not the way it works. That's not how it's ever worked. Nor is that how it works today. Galatians chapter 5 then, do you have your place there? We started verse number 16 last week. This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lusts of the flesh. For the flesh lusteth against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary the one to the other, so that you cannot do the things that you would. So why you can't get done what you want to get done is because there is this war taking place inside of you. The Spirit versus the flesh. And all this we kind of rehearsed and we covered last week. Verse 18. But if ye be led by the Spirit, ye are not under the law. Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these, and then this long list of the works of the flesh and what they look like. Verse number 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and the lust. And if we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. And let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another. So a couple things. Before we get into the list of the fruit, a couple things. What we need to know about the process. What we need to know about how this fruit is grown in our life. First, you need to know this. It is an internal process. It is an internal process. You see, here's what he says. Look at verse 23. Because verse 23 ends in kind of a strange way. And if you aren't careful, you kind of blow through the list of what the fruit is. And you kind of blow through the list and you don't really catch the meat maybe at the end of verse 23. So verse 23, and it ends this way. Against such there is no, and what's the word? Against such there is no law. Now what does that mean? What does it mean that he would kind of tag at the end of this that there is no law against these things? Well, imagine a law against joylessness. Imagine a law against anxiety or stress. Imagine someone would say, here's the law, you must always have peace in your life. And if you are peaceless, then you are breaking the law and we will fine you, or we will incarcerate you, or we will you know, whip you however many times. And you've broken the law because you are joyless. So everyone at church must walk around with joy. Ready? That's the law. Go. And if you find somebody not walking around church with joy, you have permission to collect $25 from them, okay? This is a church law. Imagine someone trying to pass a law against these things. That's what he's saying. Against these things, there is no law. Why? Because you can't enforce these by law. Okay, so a law, it can be, normally a law is negative in nature, but it can be summarized as moral constraint, right? Moral constraint. The law can stop the results of a messed up heart or a messed up life, but the law cannot actually deal with the heart itself. The law cannot actually deal with the life itself. So, for example then, a well-enforced law may prevent murder, but it cannot get rid of anger, and anger is the root of murder. So a well-enforced law can prevent murder, but it cannot stop anger. And anger is what is happening in the heart, which is then resulting in murder. A law may be able to get rid of theft or stealing or anything of that sense. It might be able to get rid of it, but it cannot stop it. Why? Because it cannot deal with the heart. And in the heart is jealousy, and in the heart is envy, and in the heart is this lusting after and this longing for something you have. And so it can't deal with the heart. And so this well-enforced law, as good or as well as we may enforce the law, it can't deal with where the law can't reach the heart. And so that's why he says in verse number 23, the inference is this: the Spirit goes where the law can't. The Spirit goes where the law can't. When you use the law all by itself, you may make an individual moral, but you will make that individual moral at the expense of joy and peace and love. See, that's what he's saying. We took our fruit, we stuck it down in the ground, we covered it with soil, we have the light, we have the water, now, ta-da, grow. No, that's not the way it works. And thus, the farmer doesn't reap the benefit that when you walk out and you've planted and you've pruned and you've protected and you've nurtured and you've watered and you've shaded and you've gotten the right light and you've worked on this tree and on this vine for however long it is, and you've been very careful to be a very good gardener. When you walk out and you see the fruit, there's something that happens inside of you, and you reach up and you take the peach off of that tree, and there is something inside you. Wow! I mean, all the work and all the labor and all the love and all the care and all the attention and all the affection, right? Because you didn't just go through the list. You didn't just enforce the law. The law may make a person moral, but it will make an individual moral at the expense of joy and peace and love and long-suffering and gentleness. You want an example? The Pharisees. Jesus says, except your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you cannot see the kingdom of heaven. Okay, that's not a rebuke to the Pharisees. That's a rebuke to you and me. What he's saying is the Pharisees have perfected law living. They've perfected it. They're better at law living than everyone else. But the Spirit goes where the law can't. And unless your righteousness beats theirs, and everybody who heard that message would have went, that ain't going to happen. There ain't no way that that's going to happen. Except your righteousness exceeds theirs, You cannot see the kingdom of heaven. Which, by the way, there was only one person whose righteousness ever exceeded theirs. And his name was Jesus Christ. Because he was born of a virgin, he was sent here from heaven, because he lived a perfect sinless life, because he died an atoning death, and then because he raised gloriously from the dead. And when you place your faith and trust in him, he took his righteousness and he applied it to your account. Now, it's not my righteousness that gets me into heaven. It's not my good doing that gets me into heaven. It is only the righteousness of the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's true for every person in this room. That's true for any person in the world who hopes to get into heaven. Except your righteousness exceeds theirs, and there's only one that would ever happen. Because even their righteousness, as good as it is and as good as it was not generating or producing love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Their righteousness was choking those things out. They made them moral, sure. But it made them moral at the expense of joy and peace and love. It made them moral at the expense of joy and peace and love. There's a very interesting passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the love passage, right? 1 Corinthians 13, Paul talks about all these things that you can have in your life and that you should have. But he says this, that if you do not have charity, then you are as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. He said you may do good, you may preach, and you may prophesy. You could give all your money to feed the poor. You could go to church every day, every week, for as long as you live. But if you do not have love, what does he say? It doesn't matter. If it doesn't have love, all the law giving and all the law living and all the religiousness and all the deeds and all the moral attributes and all these things, if there's no love, then they won't last in the end. That's what he's saying. It is not something that can be forced externally onto you or onto me. It cannot be forced from the outside. It's something that grows from the inside. It is internal. The Spirit goes where the law cannot go. The Spirit goes where the law cannot go. So it is first internal. Second, it is interdependent. Okay, look at verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. The fruit of the Spirit is. If they're all not growing, then they're not growing at all. If they're not all growing, then they're not growing at all. Okay, so catch the emphasis. Here's what it says. The fruit of the Spirit is singular. Not the fruits of the Spirit are plural. Okay, so can we like rewind to English class? I understand I said English class, and you know you're not supposed to talk about English at church, right? But can we rewind? Remember that? The fruit of the Spirit is singular. The fruit of the Spirit is all these things. And they're all interdependent on each other. Not the fruit of the Spirit are these singular individual things, and you can pick one and choose one. You don't go through the buffet line of give me a little bit of love, give me a little bit of joy, give me a little bit of patience, but I don't want any of that other stuff. Right. Anything green, leave it off my plate when I go through the buffet line, right? This is how most people approach their fruits. They go like, well, good message, Dave. Talk about, you know, faith and talk about love, but leave off all that patient stuff. Oh, no. And here's what we do. We tend to think of ourselves in the best possible light there is, right? So if we're really good at giving, then we get really excited about the messages of giving. And if we're really bad with serving, well, then anybody talks about serving. Well, what about giving? Let's go back and talk about that. Let's talk about what I think I'm strong at. And the revelation of this passage is, if they're not all growing in your life, then none of them are growing at all. If they're not all abounding, then you're not abounding at all. If they're not all being produced in your life, then you have no produce in your life at all. This is what Paul says. It is the fruit, singular, of the Spirit, not the fruits of the Spirit. We tend to look at these things like a list. Give me a little bit more of that. Give me less of this. Give me more of that. Go down the check. And Paul says, no, they're all building one on the other. They're all building one on the other. Third and last. The fruit comes in a gradual process. It's incremental. It comes in a gradual process. Can I show you the contrast? Look at verse number 19. You see it? Verse 19. Now the works of the flesh are. The works of the flesh are. Okay, so the works, it implies like a set action. The action of the flesh, this is what it is. What is an action? It is something that happens at a certain time. It's a one-time event. It is an action. It happens, and then it's over. So the works of the flesh are one-time event. It happens, and it's over. But it isn't growing. It isn't continual. It isn't in the progressive sense. It's not the work of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering. It's the fruit of the Spirit is. Which is a very important contrast. So the flesh is, I almost said the fresh is. I guess it could work that way too, okay? So the flesh is one time act. It's this work of the flesh. Boom, it happened and it's done. And now you live a life out of the consequence of the decision that you just made in that moment. You got it? Boom, it was a moment where I lied. Boom, I lied. It was the act. It was done. And now I'm living out the consequence of that lie. There was this adulterous relationship. Boom, now I'm living out the consequences of adultery. So there was this impure thought. Boom, now I'm living out there was this gossip. It's happened, it's done. Now I'm living out the consequences of it. But that is not how he says the Spirit comes to fruition in our lives. It's not the work, boom, one time. It's the work of the Spirit. Boom, I got joy one time, and now I'm living out the consequences of love. Boom, I got joy one time. I heard a sermon about it. I made a decision. I'm going to be a joy-filled Christian and just rejoice in the Lord always. How many of you have made a decision to be joyful before at some point in your life? Let me see. Raise your hand. Okay, everybody else in the room needs to make that decision. Or wake up. One of the two. I'm not for sure which one it is. This is why in your life, you make a decision. Okay, fine, that's a good message. I need to be joyful. Man, rejoice in the Lord always. I want to be a joy-filled Christian. We come to the altar. Oh, Lord, help me be joy-filled in my life. We stand up. We walk outside. We get in our car. We get on the 405. And why is there always traffic on the 405? Why does it happen like that? Because the fruit of the Spirit is something that grows in your life. It is not a one-time decision that you make. I'm going to be joy-filled. I'm going to be patient. I made a decision. I'm going to be patient. So now I get to the restaurant this afternoon and I got to wait in line for my food. No, I made a decision to be patient. So this shouldn't bother me. And here you are. This shouldn't bother me. This shouldn't bother me. This shouldn't bother me. This shouldn't bother me. This doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. It's bothering you, but it's not bothering me. It's bothering me. I'm bothered, right? Okay, this is very different. The contrast is very different. The work, the action of the flesh. One-time decision, now you're living out the consequence of it. By the way, that's a very powerful consequence. It's a very powerful. You are not defined by the work, but you do live in consequence of the decision or the action or the work that you made in the flesh. The fruit of the Spirit is something that is growing in your life. How many of you learned this already? Fruit comes slowly. How long have I been preaching? Too long? That's what somebody would say? Yeah, okay. 25 minutes maybe? Give or take 15? Okay. How many of you know I'm going to have to sit here for a long time? Till I see anything. You want to stay with me tonight? You want to do an all-night little vigil of like watch the peach tree grow in church? No? Okay. Fruit comes slowly. All right, parents in the room, do you remember when your kids were little or if they are little? Dad, did I get any taller? Measure me. Did I get any taller? How many of your parents had like the door frame that they marked for your height, right? Remember when you were so captivated by being tall? And you like, here's the mark, you know, or really, you know, that's a mark on the wall, okay? And you're like, okay, I went to bed last night, I ate my vegetables, I had a bunch of carrots and a bunch of green beans. Measure me now. You're like, well, it doesn't really work like that. Yeah, but you said if I slept and if I ate my vegetables and if I drank milk that I would grow. Right, it does, but it's like it doesn't happen like that. You, why won't I grow? What if I stand on my toes? What if I walk around like this? What if we get one of those medieval things? You're like, you stretch my body out. Can I get help? Can I get life that way? You can't track growth that way. How many of you know is that if we left this plant here and we came back in the morning and we looked and we're like, okay, we got anything yet? I don't know. You guys go into the office. You guys go ahead and get work done. I'm going to stay here and I'm going to watch and see if this thing will grow at all. How many of you know we're not going to see anything? Why? Because growth comes slowly. Growth is almost imperceptible to the naked eye. And certainly there are technologies now that we can set down and we can turn on a recording device and we can watch it and we can watch it. We can fast forward it and we can watch something grow. It's really cool to do that. But try to do that with a tomato plant in your backyard. Tell me how it works out. Growth is almost imperceptible to the human eye. But occasionally, every so often, God will bring a circumstance or a situation into your life, and it's God's way of pulling out a measuring stick and measuring you, and you measuring yourself. And you end up saying things at those moments like this, man, I would have never responded that way a year ago. And you know what that is? It's growth. And if that would have happened to me 5 years ago, I don't think I could have made it. You know what that is? It's growth. Every now and then, God brings a trial or a burden or a storm or a river or cancer or a diagnosis or poor health or a relationship problem. Every now and then, God brings something into your life and it causes you to see just how much you have grown. Just how much you have grown. You know, if he would have said that to me 2 years ago, I mean, I would have given him the what for. But now, you bit your tongue. And you turned the other cheek. Or you were patient. Or you actually said, I'm sorry, would you forgive me? And before, you would have never done that. That's growth. That's growth. Have you ever been walking along a sidewalk and seen the sidewalk all broken and busted up and like the root of a tree growing into the middle of the sidewalk? How many of you have ever seen something like that before, yeah? Here's this little acorn seed that falls out of a tree, lands in the ground, and over time, the rain and the sun and the water and the dirt and the soil compact that seed down into the ground. And this little seed that's like, you know, like an acorn seed. I mean, it's just this big. If you took that little acorn seed and you walked up to that same piece of concrete, that same piece of sidewalk, and you said, all right, sidewalk, we're going to break you up today. I've got this seed. Here it goes. Bombs away. And you threw the acorn seed at the sidewalk. Would it break the sidewalk? No. But you let that acorn seed land in the ground, and you let the sun come, and you let the soil cover it, and you let the rain come, and you let that acorn seed take root, and you let it begin to grow down where no one can see. And all of a sudden, here comes this little sprout. And if you don't pull the sprout out, then it gets a little taller, like about knee high. And if you don't chop that down really quick, then it gets about waist or eye high. And then before you know it, here's this seed that's converted into a tree. And here come these roots, and they're breaking out the sidewalk, and it's busting up something that you can never move on your own. And this little acorn seed, over time, began to break it up. The fruit of the Spirit is a seed planted in your heart, and through patience, and through prayer, and through time, and through walking with God, and through growing, that slab of concrete is broken. And that heart that was so hard, broken. And that person who was so far away from God, broken. And what would have been absolutely impossible to take a seed and throw it at the concrete and break it up, now that same seed is broken it up. How much growth is happening in your life? And are you trying to manufacture growth like this? I got my checklist, got my soil, my seed, my light, my water, my little pot. Now grow, little seed, grow. Are you trying to manufacture growth in your Christian life like this? Because if you are, it'll never happen. You'll never experience it. But if there's a slab of concrete over your hard heart, and we begin to slowly learn how to walk in the Spirit over time, the concrete can break. So I guess the challenge or the conclusion of the sermon is this. What way are you trying to grow? What way are you trying to grow? I'm talking about the relationships you have in your life, the emotions you go through in your life. I'm talking about the spirit of discouragement that you sometimes get. I mean, all those things. What way are you trying to grow? Is he coming to an altar saying, okay, God, I'm going to be happy and I'm going to be a joyful Christian. It's just going to happen. I'm just going to be happy all the time from now on. Is only going to rob you of your joy. It's only going to steal away the patience. It's only going to rob you of that, because the law cannot go where the Spirit goes. But a decision to say, I want to walk in your Spirit. I want to be Spirit-filled. I want to be Spirit-led. And God, I want you to have your way in my heart and in my life. And I want your work to be done in me. And these hands are yours. And these eyes are yours. And this mouth is yours. And God, I want not just to live in the Spirit, but I also want to walk in the Spirit. And if we live in the Spirit, why then are we not led by the Spirit? Isn't this what he says? So my question to you tonight is this. Will you walk in the Spirit? Will you walk in the Spirit? No checklist. No checklist. No coming to the altar going, okay, I got this, I got that, check. Now go out the back door and ta-da! No, I'm just saying, tonight the decision for you maybe needs to be, Lord, I want to walk in your Spirit tonight. And when I go to the office tomorrow, I want to walk in your Spirit. And when I have that tough conversation later this week, I want to walk in your Spirit. Let's stand together for prayer, shall we?